Exodus, the 7th chapter, starting with verse 17. And we had messages already on the first several plagues, but I'm going to review them just a little bit because they all fit one another and they follow sequentially. Verse 17 says, "Thus saith the Lord, in this shalt thou know that I am the Lord. Behold, I will smite with the rod that is in mine hand upon the waters which are in the river, and they shall be turned to blood." If you remember, the rod meant correction. The rod meant telling you what's wrong with you and what to do about it. Now, when you're in the wrong spirit, this rod will cause your water to turn to blood. If you remember, water meant your saliva, your tears, your gastric and pancreatic juices. In other words, all your body fluids turn to blood. Blood meaning passion, temperament, and disposition characteristic of your parental heritage. In other words, the minute I tell you what you're doing and what's wrong with it and what to do about it, you're going to start acting like mama and dad. You're going to start acting the way you acted when they corrected you when you were a child. If you screamed and moaned then, you're going to scream and moan now. If you look for excuses and you cried then, you're going to cry now. In other words, it'll make you act like a child again. The water is turned to blood. You will get upset. Now there's a consequence to pay for that temperament. Exodus 8:3. And the river, remember now, the river is now turned to blood. Your juices are all upset. You're mad. You're acting like you did as a child. Now this river of blood now has consequences. Verse 3 of chapter 8 says, "And the river shall bring forth frogs abundantly, which shall go up and come into thine house, into thy bedchamber, upon thy bed, into the house of thy servants, and upon thy people, and in thy ovens, and in thy kneading troughs." In other words, you're going to have frogs everywhere. Now, if you remember, frogs meant one who leaps around in the marsh, a marsh leaper. Remember, marsh meant morass, and morass means a difficult, troublesome, or perplexing state of affairs. In other words, the minute you get upset because I've told you the truth, you're going to find one problem after another. You jump from one to another. Everything you touch turns to frogs. It's the Midas touch in reverse. You jump from problem to problem to problem. And it doesn't matter what blessing God gives you, you find a way to turn it into a frog. Now that's what happens now when you're in this wrong state of mind because you're upset at the truth. And you've turned this thing, this disposition of yours, your physical being, you've turned it into anger. And that means then everything you see is going to be a problem. And if it isn't really a problem, you'll make it one. Now, once you have these problems of your own making, we have the next plague, which is lice, Exodus 8:16. "And the Lord said unto Moses, say unto Aaron, stretch out thy rod and smite the dust of the land, that it may become lice throughout the land of Egypt. And they did so, for Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod and smote the dust of the earth, and it became lice in man and in beast. All the dust of the land became lice throughout all the land of Egypt." Now, if you remember, dust is what you're made of. So now you are full of frogs. You're mad inside of you. Everything you look at is a problem. Nothing works right, and now you start breaking out in lice. Now, lice, if you remember, meant a gnat from its characteristic of infixing a sting in its victim. In other words, now you become someone that goes out and tries to plague everyone to listen to your problem. You want to sting them. You want to infix your sting in someone else. You have a burning desire to tell someone, anyone that will listen, how horrible things are for you. And incidentally, how God is not blessing you. And what that preacher did, how dare him turn my juice to water? Or was it to blood? So you see, then you have a desire to find someone who will agree to with you. You call this preacher and I say, no, you're wrong. And you have the answer. And I'm not buying that it's somebody else's fault. You can't sting me. I'm unstingable. I don't want your poison. So then you slither off to try to find someone you can sting because you have poison. See, this lice becomes a burning desire to find someone that you can sting, someone that you can exchange poisons with. See, the purpose for fangs or a sting is to either inject or to take something out. In this instance, it's to inject something, poison. Now, if you remember, the word sting meant a sharp-pointed organ used to prick, wound, or inject poison. And I submit to you that's the tongue, because the book of James says, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. So now you're talking wrong, trying to infect someone with your wrong. But you see, there's a difficulty with you doing that. There's a special way to get it done. You want to do it with swarms. That's the next plague. Exodus 8:21. Now you have all this poison, and you'd like to take the preacher, the Lord, your husband, your wife, somebody apart and just blast them up one side and down the other. But you can't do it pointedly. You have to find a way to do it. You've got to swarm in order to do it. Well, the fact that you want to do it is part of the swarm. How you do it is the other part. Swarm means to intermix and to braid, to put things together in a blend. Swarm also means a large number led by a queen. A large number of something as bees, ants, termites. They're all led by a queen bee, a queen termite, or a queen ant. So you see this swarming desire from the queen as she's leaving from one hive to another. She wants to take some of the bees with her. And the queen can be a man, it doesn't matter. They have a desire to lead. And they have a desire to lead in the place of the man. And that's what makes them a queen bee. That's what it means to swarm. That's when dissatisfaction sets in. And you say, well, I don't know if I'm happy here. Maybe I'd be happier somewhere. The queen is trying to swarm you. She's trying to get you to leave to someplace else because she wants you to be led by a woman, not by a man. So see, the swarm is led by a queen. You can see that in nature. Wasps, I don't care what it is. If they're swarming, they're led by a queen. She's the reproductive life of the hive. The word queen means a woman who rules over a monarchy in her own right. She rules where a man ought to rule. It also means a female sovereign. The queen also means a male homosexual. It means a man who has feminine characteristics. It means a man who won't be a man. Now, if you're not a man, there's only one other choice. If you don't want to rule your house, then you got to be the queen. And that's why you want to swarm. That's a plague. You're not comfortable where you're at anymore because you want the queen. And listen, the queen in your house has been destroyed. If it was your mama, she's gone. If it was your wife, she's gone. And if you don't have a woman lead, then you want to lead as a woman by swarming and just taking off. But there's another definition for the word queen. Its root is Q-U-E-A-N. That's where we get the word Q-U-E-E-N. And queen with an A means a woman who is a bold, brazen hussy. In other words, this is God's interpretation of what it is when you have this desire to lead where a man ought to lead. You're a bold, brazen hussy. And if you remember, the word hussy comes from the word huswife. And huswife is a mutation of a husband, H-U-S, and a wife, a man who cannot make a difference what the hell he is. Or a woman. That makes you a huswife. Now, you want to be a husband when it suits you, but when it doesn't suit you, you want the wife to be the husband. Nothing worse than one huswife in the house is two of them. And half the time they're fighting who's going to be hus this day in this issue and who's going to be wife. You become a bold, brazen hussy, one who respects no authority but her own. And listen, I'm not talking just about the female gender. I'm talking specifically and more pointedly toward men that act like women. You become a queen. And I'll tell you, there's a price to pay for that, because after a while, no self-respecting woman will have anything to do with you. And after a while, you're going to have to find somebody else like you to swarm with you. But understand how it started. A desire to be led by a woman. And when you come to this church, I'm going to tell you something, my friend. The women who've been leading in the past stopped leading. To my knowledge, there's not a woman in this church left who has a desire to lead a man. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. Some of the problem with you guys is you are now queenless. Be careful, you might try to become your own queen. So you see, now we have the difficulty of a swarm, a desire to be led by a woman, and if necessary, to become that woman. But swarm also means the following. It means to intermix and to mix together and blend. Now, you don't like what you're hearing. Right now, people in this room do not like what they're hearing. They don't like the way this tastes. So now you got to blend it, brother. See, we got to get out the blender now. Now, what does blend mean? To mix varieties so as to produce the desired flavor. See, so what's happening? God says, you don't like it the way I'm cooking it here. So you want to blend it together until it gets the taste you want. Typical woman, they drop a little here and a little there and they taste, no, we need a little more of this and a little more of that. And you start out with a little bowl of something. By the time you add things, you got a tub. Because you keep adding things until you get just the flavor that you want. You're intermixing, you're swarming. And you want to do this with the Word of God. You want to just keep adding whatever you have. A little of here, a little of Dr. Doolittle, a little Dr. Spock, a little of this, a little of that, a little Jesus, a little truth, a little custom, a little what you like, and all of a sudden you got just exactly what you want. But it doesn't work. Why? Because you want to mix it until it gets the desired flavor, what tastes good to you. Well, my friend, what tastes good to you is what got you in the problem in the first place. So you see, now you have the situation where you're trying to become an expert as to how to produce the desired results, but also the desired flavor. And that's impossible. You see, you don't flavor this to taste. You take it the way it is, or you're going to ruin it, one of the two. So the one who swarms is the one who wants to change it. Change it until it's compatible with his or her training. So they don't have to make decisions and cut off the cord. They want to play both ends against the middle. But you see, verse 24 of chapter 8 tells you what the end result of this is going to be. And the Lord did so, and there came a grievous swarm into the house of Pharaoh and into his servants' houses and into all the land of Egypt. The land was corrupted by reason of the swarm. Now you can swarm, you can blend, you can queen all you want, but I'm telling you what's going to happen. It says the land was corrupted by reason of the swarm. Corrupted means to ruin, to destroy, to waste, and to lose. And it's because you're trying to blend. You know, you'd be better off to spit it out and say, I don't want it in any way, shape, or form, than to try to blend it together and call it the Word of God. You'd be better off just to say, I don't want it. But now that you got this far, we start out with the plague we haven't touched on. This is the next one. Now you're out mixing your own flavors. Some of you, I'm going to change your name. Call you BR from now on. Baskin Robbins, 31 flavors, minimum. And you just keep a little of this and a little of that. But let me tell you what's going to happen when it doesn't work, and it won't. You get the next plague. Exodus 9:3. Behold, the hand of the Lord is upon thy cattle, which is in the field, upon the horses, upon the asses. I could go on that one for a while, but I'll let you work on that one. Upon the camels, upon the oxen, and upon the sheep, there shall be a very grievous murrain. That's the next plague. See, now that's what's happening here is now you are thoroughly upset. You have changed the Word of God. You have added things to blend to your desired flavor. And then when it didn't work, and it didn't, now you have a grievous murrain. Here's the next characteristic. Murrain, and understand this, it hits everything. Cattle, horses, asses, camels, all your possessions. Murrain means a destroying pestilence. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean your car is going to get sick and die? We have no cattle. We have no sheep. We have no horses. We may have some of those things, but we have no cattle and sheep. So what is this destroying pestilence? What does it mean? I'm going to show you what it's going to kill in a minute, but I'm going to show you first how it kills. You say, well, we have antibiotics now, and I've had my children inoculated. That's not what I'm talking about. Destroying pestilence means the way you arrange words to speak. It means a command, how you think, how you talk, and what you teach. It becomes a destroying pestilence. In other words, you'd be better off to leave what I tell you pure, spit it out, don't do anything with it. But if you start blending it together, it's going to be a destroying pestilence, a murrain, and I'm going to tell you what it's going to affect, but first I'm going to tell you what it is. Pestilence, the way you speak, the way you think, and what you teach, becomes a pestilence. And pestilence means a fatal, contagious, or infectious disease. Everybody knows that. I'll bet you didn't know that pestilence means a doctrine regarded as harmful or dangerous. In other words, a pestilence can be what you believe. That's what destroys your life, what you believe, because that's what you will speak, and that's what you are going to do, and that's why it's destroying everything in your life. So you see, it's a harmful, dangerous doctrine. That's a destroying pestilence, because that's what you're going to speak. Doctrine very simply means a rule, a theory, a dogma, a belief, a principle, or something taught. In other words, you better be careful, my friend, what you believe. Because what you believe is what you will speak. And if it brings a murrain on your possessions, then you know your doctrine stinks. Now, he says in verse 6, of chapter 9. I'm going to share with you what this means. And the Lord did that thing on the morrow, and all the cattle of Egypt died. But of the cattle of the children of Israel died not one. Well, someone said, oh, thank God. I have no cattle. I got a Buick out there, but I got no cattle. Well, I'm going to show you what cattle means. Those of you that know anything about banking, and I spent a considerable amount of time there, have you ever heard the expression chattel mortgage, which basically means to put a mortgage on chattel? Well, chattel is where we get the word cattle, or vice versa, rather. And basically, all chattel means is some personal property that is not real estate. Some personal possession. In other words, your personal possessions are going to die. Cattle means something bought. It means property. It means an acquisition, a possession, a purchase, a substance. That's your cattle. It's everything that you possess outside of yourself as a human being and your children. Don't walk out of here saying, I said your wife's a cow. I might be able to make a good argument for it, but I really don't believe it. All these things, all these personal things are going to die. Die means lacking positive qualities and not working right. Don't enjoy the cigarettes anymore like you used to, do you? They just don't have the positive. You're still puffing them. It's still coming out of you. You just don't enjoy it the way you did anymore. It's dying. It's lacking positive qualities. This grievous murrain is having an effect. Car doesn't work right anymore, does it? Coughs and spits. And it limps around. It's always running on three. You need crutches. Something's always wrong with your possessions. Everything breaks. You get up in the morning and everything hurts. You know, your feet hurt, your head hurts, your hat. Everything hurts. It doesn't work right. Then you go out to make breakfast and you break this and drop that and spill this. And then you go to turn something on and it dies. It doesn't work anymore. You see what's happening? You're talking wrong. Just all of a sudden, no matter how much you have around you, it stops working right. The engine overheats or it doesn't start at all. the heel on your shoe breaks at the most inopportune time. Can you see what God is saying? Your big mouth is causing everything around you to die. See, this isn't a game we're playing. As I've said before, you'd be better off to say nothing than to say anything against it. Now, I didn't say you had to do it. Don't misunderstand me now. Don't you walk out of here and saying, I said you had to do this. I said you can do it or not do it. I said don't talk against it. Because if you do and it's true, your cattle are going to die. Die also means no longer used or significant. In other words, the things you used to enjoy, whether it's fellowship with your family, with your husband, or whether it was going out for this or that, all of a sudden, you don't do those things anymore. And if you do, you don't enjoy them. There's just no enjoyment in those things anymore. There's something seriously wrong in your life. It's a grievous murrain. And remember, it came because you mixed the Word of God with your traditions and your customs, and then when it didn't work, you had the filthy nerve to blame God and or me and or your spouse or all three of us. You're the one that polluted it. You're the one that stuck your impurities in it. You're the one that thought you were the theological genius, and you mixed doctrines. And you took a little of what mom taught you and dad and what you believe, and you got it all mixed together till it gave you the desired flavor. And then when it didn't work, you got upset and blamed the Lord. And now everything you have is dying. Died also means not yielding a return and unproductive. You just can't enjoy the things you used to. You're still doing them. Doing it more, enjoying it less. Isn't that a strange paradox? Before you could enjoy it, and you did it, you regretted it afterwards, but you enjoyed it for a time. Now you can't even enjoy it, and you're doing it more. It becomes a strange paradox. It becomes a trap. There's not enough alcohol. There's not enough drugs. There's not enough of anything that you need to satisfy that gnawing need that you have inside of you. Why? Because it's dying. It's lost its power in your life. Why do you think people go out and OD? Why do you think people have to drink more and more? Because it's losing its power. Now, the medical doctors will tell you, well, you're building a tolerance level. And that's true. They just don't know what they mean. See, it's becoming insignificant. It's losing its quality. It's becoming obsolete. It no longer yields a return. It would take a bottle of whiskey before, now it takes a case. Whatever it took before, it takes three times as much now. And that habit you had before that cost you $20 a day cost you $80 a day now. And one day it'll cost you $200, and one day it's going to cost you your life. Why? Because it's no longer yielding a return. It takes more to do less. You have to fight more now to get the kick you used to get out of one good argument. You have to fight with your husband every day. Well, I got rid of that bum. Well, now you're fighting with your kids. But you're still fighting. You don't get enough. And then there's always Rube. Call him. See what's happened? All these things, all these habits that you said were so vital no longer yield a return. What a horrible situation where the very thing that was killing you, you now need more of, and it's not doing a thing for you anymore. And that's why these people that push these things, whether it's alcohol, cigarettes, drugs, I don't care what it is, once they've got you, it's a locked-in market. Because your need becomes more and more. Not because you love it more. You know why your need becomes more? Because it loses its power in your life. And you need 10 times as much to get the amount of kick you got out of one thing. So you see, you've got a murrain on your hands. You don't enjoy what you're doing, but you need more of it. It's a real plague. It's a horrible situation to be involved in. Now, once you come to the realization that that thing that you thought you wanted is no longer serving you, you're ready for the next plague. Now that you understand, you're in a hopeless trap. You're in a situation where the more you get, the less it does for you. And now you're starting to get the next plague you'll find in verse 10. It says, and they took ashes of the furnace and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses sprinkled it up toward heaven, and it became a boil, breaking forth with blains upon man and upon beast. So this is a dual boil, or a dual plague. It's a boil breaking forth in blains. So it's twofold. Now understand this. You are so upset now, and you're so angry, because the very thing I told you is coming to pass, and you go out and try to get more of it, and it's not doing the job. Now you've got a boil. Boil means an inflammation and an ulcer. It means to burn internally. It means a botch. You got a botch on your hands. Now, botch very simply means a boil, a sore, and ulcers. You know, sound like a circle. But that's not all botch means. See, once a person at this point to the boils, they become experts. See, now they know how to fix everything. Well, let me tell you what botch means. To repair or patch clumsily. You're amazing people, you know that? Because I see myself in this. You get to the point where you say, well, God, I knew how to break this. So how I broke it must be the way to fix it. So you see, now you have a botch. You have a plague called a boil. Now, botch basically means you've decided to fix it yourself. But botch means to repair a patch clumsily. It means a badly patched place. Botch means to spoil something by poor performance and by bungling. So you see, you repair things the way you broke them. You broke them with poor performance, clumsy performance, bad performance, and bungling performance. So now you have to fix them. You're the expert. So what do you fix them with? Clumsy, bad, bungling performance. So see, this botch mentality is when you finally realize that what Jesus told you was true. And now you're too proud to come back and say, you know, you were right. So what do? I'm going to fix it myself. Nobody will ever know. Well, you're botching it. You're just botching the job completely. First you fixed it so it wouldn't work at all. Then you fix it so it doesn't work right. It's a clumsy job at best. It's a botch. But you see, when you do botch it and it doesn't work, you're not through yet. You got to have a blame. Once you go to botch, blame is the next one. You know what blame means? To break forth with blains. Blains is an inflammatory pustule. One of those little things that you go like that. That's an inflammatory pustule. Disgusting and sickening. But it's not as bad as it when it comes out here. See, this is just a physical manifestation of this inflammation you've got inside. And it breaks out in pus. This way. Or this way. So it means to belch forth. In one case, it's pus, or it means to belch forth, to expel gas through the mouth from the stomach. Now, some of you go both ways. And it is not any more tolerable or attractive, no matter which way you're going to expel it. See, you got something inside of you that's wrong. All the food you eat, no matter what you do, no matter what you drink, it turns in there and you're full of gas, belching up a storm. You got to be ashamed of yourself. Some of you guys, I've seen you think it's just tough. Listen, I don't care which end of you it comes out. That's a disgusting habit to have. You got to do it. Go do it somewhere else. Show a little concern. It means to belch forth or to expel gas through the mouth. In other words, everything you're taking in is souring inside of you. And it's becoming gaseous. And it doesn't matter if it's food you're getting spiritually and mentally or physically, they're all manifestations of the same thing. Now, what else does belch forth or expel gas mean? It means to utter curses or orders violently. See, that's the individual that the only way they can discipline, the only way they can make their point is by uttering curses or orders violently. Now, all you have to do is listen how you talk. Driving down the freeway, praise the Lord, and you get a flat. How much praising do you do when you go out there and kick that SOB tire. No, it's a Michelin. Where did it get? All of a sudden became an SOB. What did it all of a sudden, did it change? See, you're uttering curses. When the pressure comes up, we can really tell what's inside. Then you can know just how much of a Christian, not that you are, but how much of a Christian you're willing to let out. Or would you rather have pus come out? Because a pustule is a pimple. Now, I think it's sad for a man of God, a child of God, to reduce themselves to a pimple. Because you see, a pimple is nothing more than a small elevation of the skin containing pus. Now, you know how disgusting that is. But when you hear the truth and the best you can do is utter a curse or make an accusation or get upset, you're a pimple. And all these things that are coming forth out of you is pus. That's disgusting. You know that? Now, I don't know why I don't have a wife, or my wife is upset at me. Who would love a pimple? Dress it however you want. Put high karate on it. I don't care what you do. A pimple is a pimple. And it's not going to be attractive. I don't care what you call it. Call it what you want. It's still a pimple. And it's still full of pus. And it's still going to break forth sooner or later. All I'm saying is that sucker's ready to go. I do not want to be in its path. And you can tell when a pimple's ready to go, can't you? Because the skin color changes. You can tell when the other pimple's ready to go, too, because they always get red-faced. And they clench their teeth. And then all of a sudden, here it comes. Don't want none of that. And then they get upset because you won't take their pus. Verbal pus is what you're putting out. Your anger, it's all this inflammation inside of you. Now let me tell you what pus means. Oh, I don't have pus. That's a disgusting message. Did you hear what he said? He said, I have pus. Yes, I did, and now I'm going to prove it. The word pus means to rot, to stink, and to be putrid. Some will say, did he say it? Yes, I did. But you know what else pus means? A cry of disgust. In other words, if things inside of you stink, they're rotten and putrid, you will cry with disgust no matter what. And this word disgust is an interesting word because you say, well, why? I'm not disgusted. I don't cry with disgust. Yes, you do. Disgust comes from two words, and you learned a little about it this morning. Dis means the god of the lower world, the devil. Gust, the word is gusto, and gusto means taste and liking, enthusiastic appreciation, what you willingly choose. So you see, when you say I'm disgusted, you have willingly chosen your choice, what you like, what you taste, what you eat, what you put inside of you is of the god of the lower world. That's why you're disgusted. And incidentally, that's why you're disgusting. And incidentally, that's why you're a pimple. See, so the Lord wants you to understand that all these things that happen physically, although the doctor might tell you, well, you've got to change your diet, you've got to stop eating. He's right, physically. That will cure that physical pimple. You've got to change your diet. I'm talking about the spiritual pimple. I'm talking about the pus that comes out of your mouth. You got to change the spiritual diet, or you're going to belch forth the rest of your life, and you're going to expel gas out of your stomach. Now, at that point, some people are saying, well, maybe there's a measure of truth in what this man says. I'll take some of it. I ain't buying all of it, though. There's no way. I'm not getting into no cult. I'm taking some, but I'm not taking it all. You're ready for hail. Verse 18, behold, tomorrow about this time, I will cause it to rain a very grievous hail, such as not been in Egypt since the foundation thereof, even until now. Verse 24, so there was hail, and fire mingled with the hail, very grievous, such as there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. Now I'm going to tell you how you get hail in your life. You know what hail really means? It doesn't just mean those little balls of ice that fall from the sky, although that's what it does mean. That's one of the meanings. Hail means something spotted with black and white or grizzled. You look at the ground after a hailstorm and you see little spots of white all over and the dark background, that's black and white together. Grizzled. Now, grizzled means to make something gray in order to grumble, complain, fret, or whimper. Now, what are you making gray? Well, gray, in a minute, you're going to find out, is the blending of black and white, right and wrong. A little right and a little wrong makes gray. That's hail. So you don't want to accept that you're wrong and this is right. Now, after a while, after several plagues, after six plagues, you say, well, maybe some of the things he said were right. But you still want to hang on to some of those. So now you've got hail, dummy. Because now you're grizzling. See, so when you grumble and complain, fret and whimper, you're blending black and white in order to make gray. Now, gray is an interesting... Well, I'm going to tell you what grumble means, because I'm going to show you how you make hail. Grumble means to mutter or mumble in discontent. Complain means to beat the breast. Too bad we don't live in New York. I'd get you all tickets. You can go to the building and go do it up there on top the way it was done originally. Can't help you with Fay Wray. We'll put you up on the building. Beat your breast on you. I'll buy you some bananas even. But literally, it means to beat the breast. Animalistic instincts. Complain also means to express pain or displeasure by finding fault and making accusations. That's breast beating. And then you also fret, not like these guitars have, frets. Fret means to worry and to become disturbed and irritated. And what do you do when you fret a guitar? You increase the pressure or decrease the pressure so that the number of vibrations either increases or decreases. So see, every time you fret, you change your tune, don't you? So see, this is the individual that's, he's in hail. He can't, it doesn't, you're not content where you're at. One minute you're up, the next minute you're down. You're in hail. This is the plague of hail. The minute someone says something you don't like, you're in the pits. The minute someone says something you do like, you're up. See, it's black and white, mixed together, blended together to make gray. Gray means a mixture of black and white. Everybody knows that. But gray also means a vague, intermediate area between morality and immorality. The famous gray area. Well, after all, Reuben, you do know that it's not just black and white. There are gray areas. I know there are. I also know that's the seventh plague. I also know that that means that you're in a situation where you're trying to blend black and white. A little bit of your wrong with a little bit of the Lord's right makes gray. That makes hail. Now let me tell you what you're trying to do by mixing black and white. Black means the opposite to white. Black means to be without light and complete darkness. It means to be evil and wicked and harmful and dismal and gloomy and angry and without hope. That's what black means. Now you try to mix that with white. Well, white means opposite of black. Morally and spiritually pure and innocent and free from evil intent. Now, in order to mix the two, you find your gray area. And that's the area that you live in. You'd be better off to choose black so that you'd know that you're wrong. Choose white so you'll know what's right. Or choose your black so you'll know what's wrong. But you mix them together, and then you don't know what's right or wrong. Now you have to take allergy tests. And I say, well, maybe if I stop a little of this and do a little more of that, why don't you just cut it down the middle and say, I'm going to do right or I'm going to do wrong. If you think you're right, do it. And then the end result will tell you if you're right. But what you try to do is you mix it black and white together, and then inevitably it's not going to work, and then you have this insoluble problem. What caused it? Well, it's the black in there. Well, where's the black? Well, it's in there, but all I see is gray. I know you mixed them together. Now try to separate them. Impossible. You mix gray and white, and or black and white, and now you have gray. Let me tell you one other thing about white. Definition. White means colorless. No red, no anger, no green, no jealousy, no orange, no regret, no yellow, no fear, no blue, no depression, no indigo, no deep depression, and no violet, no violent action. That's what white is. So let me tell you, when I can tell you you're not in white, it's when you get angry, jealous, regretful, fearful, depressed, deeply depressed, and take violent action. Somehow or other, you have mixed in a color with the white, and now you've got hail. And you've got hail that's now focusing on your life. And let me tell you the difficulty with that. There's no way on this God's earth to separate it once you blend it all together. We have to come back to square one and dump the whole thing and start over again. I have to say, look, brother, let's start here. This is wrong, and this is right. Let's try it again. And we start, and little by little, you do your little finger painting, and before I know it, you've got the thing all, let's play in the paint, and let's do, and let's make gray again. And then you come back and say, oh, brother, what have I done here? What am I going to do here? Well, we're going to clean this thing off, going to wash your hands, and we're going to start again. Oh, good. Now, here is the black, and here is the white. Oh, can I have a little of this? No, that's wrong. Well, I'll cover it with a little white. You can't do that. Well, let's do this. Now we got gray again. Brother, what am I going to do? Well, we're going to clean it off, we're going to wash your hands, and we're going to start all over again. Does this sound familiar to some of you? I don't like you. You know that? Life would be a lot simpler if you weren't so dumb. Now, I would think, having done it, and here's where the dumb part is. After 58 million times of you coming and saying, what am I going to do? I say, we're going to wash it off, wash you off, and we're going to start all over. You still come back and say, what are we going to do? Follow my lips. We're going to wash you off, clean off the whole thing, and we're going to start again. Now, you would think that that much of it you could get. But you don't even want to get, we don't know what to do. Because when I give you the alternatives again, you mix them again. You know what you want? You want me to stand up here representing God and saying, you get no black. All we're giving you is white, and you have no choice but to be right. Uh-uh. You have a choice. Love requires that you have an option. Love requires that you make the free will choice. Love requires that we offer you both and put a skull and crossbones on one and say, don't do this one. And don't mix it with the other. Well, yeah, but if we have it on the rocks, don't have it on the rocks. Well, give me a twist of lemon. No, let's not have it with a twist. It's wrong. And I don't care what you put in it. You might alter the taste to your flavor, or rather the flavor to your taste, but the end result is going to still be the same. So see, what I'm trying to tell you here is this constant need and desire to mix black and white, to make gray, is the plague of hail. And after a while, you can't separate the two. You don't know the difference between right and wrong. And it isn't amazing for those of you who love this plague so much. I've heard you. You tell your children, I told you that before. Don't you understand the difference between this and that? No, I don't. But that's wrong, and this is right. But we mixed it all together, Mom. Well, why'd you do that? That's what you do. Well, where'd I learn that? That's what he does. And then you look at me and say, that's not what I do. And I look at this, I can't find nothing in here either. So where did you get it? We can go back to that message again if you want. I thought you had enough of that this morning. It's your king, it's your Pharaoh, isn't it? Now, once you get to this point, I'm going to share with you No, I don't have time. We've got three plagues left. We've got locusts, we've got darkness, and we got death. Death of the firstborn. And let me tell you what you're running a risk of. I'm just going to give you an example of what the last part of the message is. We'll do it Wednesday. When you became a child of God, you received a birthright when you were born again. And that birthright is you have a right to have power and dominion over your own body. You have a right to rule your family and to train your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. You have a right to have your appetites under control. You have a right to have your children respect your word because it's the word of God. That's your birthright. Now, if you wait until this last plague comes on, the death angel comes and he said, all firstborn. He didn't make a distinction between the nation of Israel, the people of Pharaoh, the cattle. He says, all the firstborn are dead meat unless I see the blood. You know my favorite song. The scripture is there. It says, when I see the blood, I will pass over you. Now let me tell you what that means. The people that accept the blood as a covering for their sin are the ones.